From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, we go to Nicaragua to look in on the election coming this weekend, a very important election and an awful lot of backfield shenanigans that originate in Washington and Langley and Facebook headquarters. And we're going to speak, of course, with journalist Stephen Sefton, who is speaking with us from Esteli, Nicaragua. Stephen, welcome.
Thanks for inviting me again, Don. The United States historically has regarded Nicaragua as strategic importance. And right back from the 19th century, from the middle of the 19th century, the United States government was looking at Nicaragua with a view to perhaps building a canal there, a canal that was eventually built in Panama.
And they cared so much about it, by the way, that they grabbed Colombia and snapped Panama off it so they could have a separate state they could dominate and build the canal.
Yeah, and so then subsequent to that, they invaded Nicaragua in the early 20th century. There were U.S. Marines in the country for many years, which led to a war of national independence, because U.S. Marines were essentially occupying Nicaragua to the point where they controlled and managed the national elections. They counted the votes. But that was back in the 1930s. And so against that occupation, there was a famous rebellion, a celebrated rebellion, led by General Augusto C. Sandino, who prevailed against the United States government. Imagine that.
Wow.
Back in the 1930s.
That's why they invoke his name today, right?
Yeah, so the name of the ruling party here is the Sandinista Front for National Liberation, and they very much inherited not just the nationalist independence struggle of Augusto Sandino from the 1930s, but his vision of regional integration. And all that historical stuff is extremely relevant to why the United States government is at all interested in the elections here now in 2021.
You've seen, we'll go back to the Monroe Doctrine in the early 19th century, basically telling Europe, which is the only other party that could express any contrary interest, this is ours. Everything south of the border here, wherever it was at the moment, actually, probably is New Jersey, that belongs to us, and stay out, and et cetera. And then to the people, of course, in Mexico and Central America and South America and the Caribbean, they said and did what they would like. Kick the Spanish out in 1898, and the British couldn't really project an awful lot of power over here. And so the U.S. has been on the back of the now 600 and some odd million people in Central and South America and the Caribbean. And this kind of a project that seeks to first obtain sovereignty and self-determination for those 600 and some odd people, and then to consolidate and build something for themselves, runs completely contrary to the imperial designs of the United States. And so where it props up and takes root, like it has in Nicaragua and in Venezuela and in Cuba, the U.S. is madder than hell and ain't going to take it anymore.
Yeah, and that is essentially it. The United States can't tolerate any political project south of the Rio Grande that promotes national sovereignty, independence and autonomy, and regional integration based on a progressive vision of meeting the needs of the impoverished majority in South America, Central America, and the Caribbean, with a focus on the needs of the human person rather than on corporate profit. And that is the essential struggle between the United States and any government, any progressive government, whether it's a revolutionary government like that of Miguel Díaz-Canel in Cuba, Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, Luis Arce and his colleague Evo Morales in Bolivia, and any progressive political project is going to be attacked by the United States and its Canada and its European allies.
You know, just one next piece of history. You have Sandino leading the revolution and projecting this, hope for regional liberation and development. He is lured to peace talks by a guy who's acting on behalf of the United States and is murdered by this guy, Anastasio Somoza. He becomes dictator, and then he's assassinated in 1956, and his sons ruled until 1979, and then you have a revolution.
Yeah, and that history, that the murder of Sandino is very much in tune with the gangster ideology of the United States: do what we want or else. And that happened not just in Nicaragua but also in Haiti, where the liberation hero Charlemagne Peralt was also murdered in an ambush by set up by U.S. forces. So, and that whole history of gangsterism from the 1920s and 1930s and earlier has just been carried forward into modern forms in our contemporary situation, our contemporary circumstances. And the gangsterism essentially remains the same: do what we want or else. And you can see that in Cuba, where Cuba has been subject to sanctions for 60 years. You can see in Venezuela, where for almost a decade now, the Venezuelan people have been subject to the most severe illegal unilateral coercive measures, because they can't legitimately be called sanctions, because only the United Nations Security Council is authorized to impose those kinds of measures against countries that defy the international law. But in this case, you have the United States defying international law as a kind of outlaw state, the outlaw state that it's always been.
Right.
And they're attacking legitimate sovereign governments and trying to influence the outcomes of elections. So, and perhaps, can we talk a little bit, Donna, would it help to talk a little bit about the nature of the electoral process here?
Absolutely. People need that context.
Okay, so I'm just to give people an idea of how the elections here are set up, there's a legal framework based on laws passed in the time when U.S.-favored neoliberal governments ran Nicaragua. The current electoral law dates from the year 2000.
Right.
Some reforms were applied in 2012, and some additional changes were made just last year. Just last year. So the overall framework, the overall electoral framework, dates from a time when U.S. Friendly governments ruled Nicaragua, and essentially the law hasn't changed very much since then, except in the sense that the confirmation of the ruling electoral body, the electoral council that oversees the elections, which is a separate power of the state from the executive power, the judiciary. And there's also a separate power, which is essentially an auditing body. So, but it is a separate power of the state. And the changes that were made in the reforms was that it was made much more democratic. They applied 50-50 representation for men and women, so that they applied gender equality. And they also brought in 40% of the composition of the Electoral Council is in indigenous and Afro-descendant people. And in terms of voting infrastructure, there are going to be around 13,500, just under 13,500 polling stations, and they'll be operating in it's usually schools that accommodate the voting centres on election day. And there are going to be over 3,100 voting centres. And in each centre, there'll be various different polling stations. So those In each polling station that will serve about a total of about 300 voters.
Right.
And if you do the math, that works out.
That's about what we have here too, by the way.
Right. So the number of voters that are qualified to vote is just over 4,300,000. They'll be voting for the president and vice president of Nicaragua. They'll be voting for 90 deputies to the National Assembly, and they'll also be voting for 20 deputies to the Central American Parliament. So that's what the voting is about. The way that the voting system is set up involves a total of over 245,000 people who will actually be the people staffing the voting centres and receiving voters and enabling the whole election process.
Wow.
And if you think about Nicaragua's population, almost 250,000 people out of a population of just over 6.5 million.
Right, that's a lot.
So that's a huge voluntary effort on the part of the population, because nobody gets paid to do that. These are all people that are proposed by the various political parties in the countries, and they are the people who actually staff the polling stations and voting centres.
Right.
So then in terms of the parties participating in the elections, despite all the propaganda to the contrary that alleges that there are no opposition parties taking part in these elections, in fact, there's the Liberal Constitutional Party, there's the Christian Way Party, there's an Indigenous People's Party called Yatama, there's the Liberal Alliance, the Alliance for the Republic, the Independent Liberal Party, and those are all opposition parties that will be putting up their candidates against an alliance led by the Sandinista Front for National Liberation. So it's a complete lie that that people are not getting a choice in Nicaragua about who to vote for, because the opposition parties, in particular Yatama and the PLC and the other liberal parties, have are very well organized nationally. Traditionally, they've always had a strong presence nationally, and it's they're taking part because they are anxious to achieve good representation in the National Assembly, where the combined opposition, as I understand it, currently have around almost 30 deputies in the National Assembly, which is not an insignificant representation. The problem for the opposition is that the latest opinion poll by the respected M&R opinion polling company suggests that electoral support for the Sandinista Front and for President Ortega is running at around 70%.
Like last time. Because... let me ask you. Quick sidetrack in terms of lying. Okay, just yesterday we reported, based on reports we'd seen from the Gray Zone and other places, particularly Ben Norton, the Facebook platform deplatformed the Sandinistas in essence in Nicaragua several days before this election. They accused thousands of people without giving them notice that they were being accused of not existing, of being bots whatever the other word, trolls.
Trolls.
You know, it was non-existent computer programs that, you know, or some marketing program in essence, and not real people. And also hundreds of organizations that these people belong to, some of which happen to actually be, you know, the political parties themselves in the main, and some government offices that don't exist. And so they were deplatformed. They were closed down from Facebook. Facebook issues a statement saying, we did this, and it's because these people don't exist. And then, of course, no one at the New York Times or Washington Post or MSNBC or CBS or Amy Goodman or anybody else did this. But folks in the gray zone contact some people in Nicaragua who were deplatformed, and lo and behold, there are actual people there, and they interviewed. I saw like a half dozen of them, I think, on Twitter. These were all real people. This is essentially the Facebook platform working in tandem, hand in glove, with the CIA to try to steal the election.
Yeah, so why is anybody surprised by that? And the ridiculous myth that Mark Zuckerberg somehow kind of magically, as a boy genius, devised Facebook is ridiculous. And Facebook was designed from the start as a CIA operation.
Right, and that's how it's been used. Look, they tried to have an uprising in Cuba with it. They're trying another one. I think it's supposed to be actually, today or next Friday? I forget.
Yeah, on November the 15th.
Right.
And likewise Google, and likewise Twitter.
Right. Yep.
Anybody that believes that these massive corporate platforms suddenly develop spontaneously.
Right, and go from zero to $1 trillion of value inside of like 15 years, by the way.
Yeah, and anybody who believes that, well,
they get their information from Facebook or Google or one of the
not
platforms.
Not only do I have a bridge in Brooklyn that I'd like to sell them, I have a bridge over the Kerch Strait and
canal in Nicaragua.
So anyway, nobody should be surprised by that. But one of the reasons that it's been applied to Nicaragua in particular is because in 2018, during the failed coup regime, regime change coup that they tried to stage back in 2018, one of the weapons, the very, very effective weapon that they mobilized was opposition use of social media, supported by massive troll farms run by the CIA.
Right.
And I've got a friend, a Cuban friend who worked in the Cuban embassy, who were monitoring what was going on at the time. And they said that there were over 1 million messages generated from troll farms based in El Salvador.
And that's into a population of about 6 million. Okay.
Right.
And so you can figure every teenager and young person, adolescent, post-adolescent, that has a cell phone or some kind of a device was getting pictures of people that looked like them getting hit on the head by the police or something with a message, you know, protest tomorrow, Tuesday at 3 o'clock.
Right, exactly. And so the Sandinista population here learned from that. Late in the day, they developed their own social media presence in Twitter and Facebook. But even back then, Facebook and Twitter were censoring people, canceling their accounts.
Well, it's been longer.
Because they realized that they were getting significant pushback from Sandinista-run accounts on their platforms.
Right.
And now what's happened over since 2019, 2020, is that especially young Sandinistas have deliberately set out, not necessarily in a coordinated way, but just because they recognize that if they don't maintain a significant presence in social media, they're leaving the way open for the right-wing opposition to again manipulate messages among the general population here in Nicaragua.
Yep.
And they've been very effective in resisting that and changing that. And that's why Facebook and Twitter had to cancel all those accounts, and Instagram. So they cancelled thousands of accounts. And we're quite lucky that Ben Norton of the Gray Zone is actually living in Nicaragua at the moment. And he has developed many friendships with local Sandinista youth. And so he was able very quickly, and I was astonished at how quickly he was able to put that article together.
Yeah.
He very quickly contacted his friends in among Sandinista people who'd had their accounts cancelled, and he produced this excellent article, which, as you say, has also been supported by articles from other people as well. I think Camilo Mejia, the former Amnesty International prisoner of conscience, has done an interview on the issue with Sputnik Radio.
Yeah.
But as you said, it's only in those media, genuinely alternative media, You're going to come across this kind of material that demonstrates the reality of what Facebook and the others have done. Because what they've done is they've only targeted Sandinista accounts.
Right.
All the trolling accounts run by their colleagues in the CIA continue in existence to seek to influence
yep.
the outcome of the elections that are happening on Sunday.
Oh, you can bet that they even captured the audiences of the banned and fired accounts and are now broadcasting to them in the stead of the Sandinistas.
Yeah, and but it's much too late. What are we, 3 or 4 days from the elections, and the measures they took were a week from the elections? They aren't going to change people's minds.
Well, you know, there's the election, and then there's the day after the election. So, you know, the election results will be positioned in front of this new audience that they've acquired with no comeback from other voices. That the election was stolen, and we'll meet you at the corner on Tuesday at 3 p.m. That's the next move.
Yeah, but they haven't even got a snowball's chance in hell of making that
gotcha.
Work.
Right.
It's just not going to work. And they've had it in Nicaragua. And why is the United States hopelessly adrift in terms of their policy in Nicaragua? For the same reason that they're hopelessly adrift in Venezuela, they're hopelessly adrift in Cuba, they're hopelessly adrift in Bolivia. They are dealing in fantasies and fictions.
Right, that's right.
And people live real lives.
President Guaido.
Yeah, I look at Guaido. What's his support level in Venezuela now? Something like 12-13%.
I don't even think his wife likes him anymore.
Well, who knows? But in terms of the region, people live their reality. And here in Nicaragua, the reality has been that people's lives have changed dramatically for the better over the last 10, 12, 13 years, ever since. Yep. The Frente Sandinista, the Sandinista Front, under President Ortega and his partner Rosario Murillo, took office in January 2007, and they've absolutely transformed the country and turned it round. And even the attempt in 2008 failed to roll that back.
2018, yeah.
2018, sorry.
Yeah.
So,
but they did kill a few people in the process, trying to have their little color revolution. I think it was black and blue was the color they wanted to use because
blue and white, blue and white national unity movement. But what did those deaths do? What all they achieved in 2018 was to consolidate support for the Frente Sandinista. That's what they achieved.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Because the general population totally rejects that most people anywhere in the world, most people want economic stability and security.
Right. That's
they want
right.
good health care. They want access to a good education system for their children.
Right.
They want some level of social security. They want access to adequate housing. Those are the things people want.
And they want
they
domestic peace.
They don't want to be confronted with roadblocks in the street. Maintained and operated by armed thugs who prevent them from going to work. You know, that's what happened in 2018.
Right.
People prevented from going to work, prevented to getting health care, prevented from going to study. You think nobody wants that.
Of course not.
But, you know, so why is anybody surprised that Daniel Ortega has 70% support here in Nicaragua? Why is anyone surprised?
Their program is to deny people that and blame it on the government. And that's why they seize control of the means of communication where they can, particularly the social media, which are very quick in terms of response time, and they make very deep and broad penetration. So they suddenly there are thugs on the corner and suddenly there are chains across the roads that, you know, people dump out their bikes on and get killed and whatever other things that they do. But they say that's Ortega, this and that. If they're the only one telling the story, they're trying to position the reality that people see in front of them. And that's why they want to have this monopoly on the information.
Reality contradicts their fantasy.
That's right. Reality sets in no matter what. If somebody's telling you everything's okay and somebody else is kicking you where the sun don't shine, you know what just happened.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, and that's true at a regional level too. And you can see it in Venezuela where they're going to have elections on, what is it, November the 21st? Mm-hmm. And those elections, in those elections, the ruling socialist United Socialist Party of Venezuela are going to get a very strong majority in the governorships and in the municipalities.
Right, for the government, you know, the government that built 3.7 million units of housing in the last 10 years in a country with 28 million people, when there isn't even 1 million units of public housing in the United States, which has 350 million people. Those new apartments are very noticeable, first of all, to the families that live in them. So now you have maybe 10 to 20 million people there. And also to the people who either would like to live in them or saw their neighbors get a step up.
Yes, I essentially what you're dealing with here in Nicaragua is an election in which you have two ideologies in play. One is an ideology that treats people like dirt, and one is an ideology that meets people's needs. Yep. So what are people going to vote for?
Right, that's right. That's, you know, and, I mean, we've said this before, you know, that with China and the United States, for example, as, you know, potential partners to countries in this region and elsewhere in the world, one of them comes in and wants to help you develop your country so you can be a better customer, and the other one wants you to give them all your stuff and carry it to their boat.
Right. And you can see that playing out across the region in all kinds of ways. But the nitty-gritty here for Nicaragua is that people are going to vote on Sunday, November the 7th. Yeah. And the result of that vote is pretty much a foregone conclusion. It's always possible there may be a completely unexpected outcome. But at the moment, all the serious polls indicate that there'll be a strong electoral support for the Frente Sandinista and the current president, Daniel Ortega, and his government. And so Nicaragua will have another 4 years, 5 years of solid government consolidating social economic and cultural programs focused on the needs of their people.
That's 70%, let me just say, here in the United States in 1964, it was 54%, I think, or something. For Lyndon Johnson, that was a landslide. And for Ronald Reagan in 1984, similar number, nothing close to 70%, a landslide. But that's not going to be characterized that way here, of course. But this is going to be a landslide. And it's going to be, I should preface it with the appropriate adjective, another landslide.
Yeah, another landslide. Yeah, so, and the... Here in Nicaragua, nobody's going to be surprised. And it's possible that the opposition may attempt to stage some kind of violent distractions, but nobody's interested in the extreme opposition here. People are prepared to go out and support and vote for the kind of constitutional opposition, if you can put it in that way, the opposition parties that respect the constitution and are prepared to play by the electoral rules. Nobody's interested in the extremist coup-mongering elements of the Nicaragua's political opposition, who they had hoped that they'd be able to implement a destabilization campaign around the elections with substantial funding from the United States government via a program called Responsive Assistance in Nicaragua, run by USAID. But that program was completely dismantled when its organizers were arrested earlier this year.
Right.
On charges to do with financial malfeasance, misuse of funds donated for nonprofit purposes, and also for their involvement in essentially organized crime. Mm-hmm. And so the attempt by the United States to mount a destabilizing campaign around the elections has completely fallen through. And the authorities here deserve credit for that, to take the measures necessary to protect their sovereign electoral process.
We're out of time, so we'll come back and do our, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking, maybe Monday.
Okay, thanks a million, Don. Take care now.
You too, Stephen. Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.